The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jackson trying to escape and run for it, and he's got it more. Lamar Jackson down the sideline. Will they give it to him? They will. Touchdown, Baltimore. Tannehill steps and fires, and it's intercepted. It's Marcus Peters who makes the play for the Ravens.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pod Like a Raven. No yelling this week in what has been one of the more bummer weeks in Pod Like a Raven history, maybe. Gus Edwards, Marcus Peters, they were hurt within the past week. The Ravens had a game that they played in Las Vegas. All three of us were in Las Vegas. There's some hoarse voices, some headaches. One of us is wearing sunglasses. but we're going to get through it. We're going to talk about the Ravens. We're going to talk about this game, and we're going to move forward. I'm Antonio Barbera, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, starting off first, Ray Charles himself on the East Coast, Tim Horsey. Tim, surviving, pulling through?
I think that's probably the way to put it. As you can tell, I'm not going to be speaking in long. If the one thing that you hate about this show is me rambling for way too long, I promise you, you're not going to get that today because I physically cannot do it. Had a hell of a time in Las Vegas celebrating my buddy Matt's bachelor party. Very good time. We're not going to share all those stories on this show. That is not that format. But it's a bit somber today because of what happened with the Ravens on Monday. You know, for us, early evening, but for you, most of you listening, Monday night. And so I guess let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's just get into it. Let's do it.
On the West Coast, Jace Evans, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Well, relatively good, I will say. definitely a little bummed about the events that transpired in Las Vegas on Monday night. But I will say, I'm less annoyed than I was as we walked the several miles back to our hotel, Antonio. And I will say I'm less annoyed than I was then. And the feeling that's really taken over me is one more of bewilderment. I cannot believe, rewatching the game today as we record, I still cannot believe the Ravens lost this football game. It makes no sense. It's one of the strangest sporting events I think I've ever attended. In terms of, well, what happened off the field, what happened on the field. It was very bizarre from top to bottom, all game. And the end, especially so. And yeah, there's no shortage of things to talk about. So we can dive right into what exactly happened. And I guess even more importantly, the problems from this game that I think we might see going forward this season.
Jace, myself, and the two other guys in the stadium crew, John and Jared, the one thing about Allegiant Stadium that is not great is essentially getting home from Allegiant Stadium. And so we made the decision, maybe because of how bummed out we were, to try to walk back to the strip. Mid-strip is where we were staying.
Oh, no.
And it was I mean, you talk about like the redemptive walk through the desert. That's what it was. Because I would say it took us at least an hour, Jace, by the end of it.
Yeah, probably an hour. And I will say probably the first 5 miles, I didn't even notice how long the walk was. I was just, you know, ranting and raving about this team like the lunatic fan I am. But yeah, by mile five, you're like, wow. We still aren't that close.
It was an interesting walk to hear Jace work out all the Ravens' issues while also being surrounded by thousands of Raiders fans. So, you know, there were slight concerns there, but we got through it in more ways than one. As for this game, boy, I mean, hand up, you know, I was on this pod last week almost guaranteeing a Ravens win and a Ravens cover. There were so many trending lines that pointed to the Ravens dominating a week one game. It looked good to start. The formula seemed right with a 14-0 lead, and then execution started to fall apart. Penalties started to happen. Big plays on the defensive side, and the game turned into a mess. But without going quarter to quarter, because in a game like this, that seems impossible for us to actually go through touchdowns and scores, as there's so many things happened. So let's start with the Ravens' offensive side of the ball instead. What worked? What didn't work? What's going to change? And I think we have to start with the offensive line here, because that was one of our main storylines coming into this game. How good were they going to be? I said good enough, basically, and at the moment, they are not good enough. They struggled all over the line between getting beat and also just not understanding the play calls. There's some highlights trickling on the interwebs of linemen just missing assignments, running the wrong direction. There's a pretty bad one of, I think it's both the left tackle and the left guard running into the right tackle and the right guard because both sides are pulling in opposite directions and they all run into each other. So it wasn't good on the offensive line. I turn to you guys now. A, how bad was it? And B, can this be fixed? Is this a Villanueva's a scrub issue, or is this Ronnie Stanley has got to get his legs under him and the execution is going to get resolved as they have more games and practices? What do we do with this offensive line?
Jason started this by talking about how he might not be as discouraged as you would after just a failure of epic proportions in a loss like this. For me, I think this, you'll never guess me, a pessimist about these things. I think it's a calamity. I think it's a nightmare. I think that the offensive line is going to derail this season. I think Alejandro Villanueva was supposed to be serviceable, and I would cut him today. That's an extremist thing with the cap and everything. You're not going to do that. You need depth on the line. But the fact that that guy is going to be starting for you week in and week out because there's simply nobody else, I think is a disaster for this football team. The Raiders got pressure all night. Yannick Ngakoue looked like a decent football player on Monday. Max Crosby, who is a good player, maybe even great, looked like a Hall of Famer against this offensive line. The Raiders sent pressure 3 times. Now go back and watch that football game. Watch the extended highlights and the amount of times that the Ravens, whether it's running the football or passing the football, I mean, Antonio, you nailed it. Seemed discombobulated, but also just guys around Lamar Jackson over and over and over again. And you would have thought that they were doing the wink defense of just sending the house. They sent pressure 3 times in that entire game. This is a disaster of the utmost and epic proportions when it comes to this season. You know, like I said, 3 times, and Jackson was pressured 18 of 33 dropbacks during this game. It was my sole biggest takeaway, and this is after even a couple days, traveling out of Las Vegas, and really the only thing I was thinking about is, one, am I going to get my voice back? Looks like no. And two, just traveling and getting home and not worrying about what happened in Vegas. Just get me home. I need to be in my bed right now. And I come back and I sit here and I'm looking at this game again, and you can say, well, it was kind of a freak game, and what a great advertisement for running football. For me, it's the Ravens are a bang average football team because their offensive line is so, so poor.
Yeah, I guess that's my overriding concern too, Tim. You know, we could get into Lamar more in a moment, but I don't know that it's a secret that, you know, a key to containing, well, not just him, any quarterback, you know, is if you could, the more and more guys you can drop to defend the wide receivers and tight ends that this team has, you know, that makes the job harder on a quarterback. And I think that's especially, you know, so for Lamar, he's shifty. He got out of some trouble. Like, it could have been much worse. He, you know, as you said, Tim, he's pressured on 54% of his dropbacks, and he probably turned a few of those into 20-yard rushing gains, because that's what Lamar Jackson does. But, yeah, the greater concern I think you touched on is they kind of just have to hope Alejandro Villanueva gets better, because there's no solution. You're, at this point, you know, we kind of talked all offseason about who's the left guard. Well, it ended up being Tyree Phillips out of the gate here, and he's going to be out for a while. And he seemed to be, he was obviously the Ravens' starting right tackle for a large chunk of last season at times. You know, all are kind of alternating with DJ Fluker a bit. But, like, really, he's the only obvious kind of swing tackle candidate they have. So if Villanueva can't get the job done, you're kind of looking at Patrick McCurry, who, you know, we watched in the preseason. Do you want Patrick McCurry to be this team's right tackle? I don't. But it was a tough look. It was a tougher game. I'm willing to at least extend a little faith that a little more time and the system can kind of get some of the, you know, some of that stuff ironed out. This team did not get a lot of time together in the preseason. And it's a long season. We have 16 more of these games. But as far as first impressions go, that was brutal. And especially against, as we kind of talked about, a Raiders defensive line that's good, but not great.
Real quickly, I don't know, and if you mentioned this, apologies, but not even Phillips being the left guard, Phillips got hurt in the game and has been placed on IR. So he's out.
Yeah.
So it's Ben Powers, it looked like, going in at left guard. And you said it, Jace. Villanueva is going to be the right tackle, and he has to get better. And I personally just don't have the faith that that's going to happen.
By week 5, it's potential. There's a lot of Nick Boyle on the right side, just pass protecting, not run blocking, not running out for routes. Just have 3 guys run routes, keep the back to block. And hope that, oh boy, Boyle can play like assistant right tackle. But we'll see how that progresses. At least the communication issues should get better as the season goes along. Guys, how about Lamar? I mean, we talked about the issues with the line. That impacted a lot of his dropbacks, as Tim pointed out, a very large percent of his dropbacks. What did you guys think overall, his performance, given what he could do? Obviously an up-and-down night for him in terms of breaking ankles on certain plays, making some great throws, some throws maybe that we haven't quite seen from him, or at least not consistently, but then also the turnovers and some other misplays there. So overall, start off, Jace, if you had to give him a grade, and then give an explanation as to what grade, why you would give him that grade.
I'd give Lamar... It's a passing grade. He had a good game, but I'd probably give him a C+, because I think he had some spectacular plays. I think that second quarter touchdown to Hollywood Brown is about as good a play as we've almost ever seen from him. The way he splits the defenders and rolls right, but doesn't just tuck it and run. He waits, he finds the open guy, and fires it for a strike. That was a fantastic play. You mentioned he hit a nice deep ball to Sammy Watkins. He had some nice, you know, some crossing stuff. I didn't think there weren't too many balls where I was like, oh God, that could get intercepted. He kind of kept those to a minimum, but he did miss some guys. One of the most glaring was he missed, and this could have been, you know, a miscommunication, because as we mentioned, Gus Edwards goes down in the lead up to this game after J.K. Dobbins goes down. And now we're looking at Tyson Williams, who we were impressed with in the regular season, or in the preseason, had never carried the ball in a regular season NFL game. So, you know, maybe that was a miscommunication, but he kind of missed him in a flat, kind of looked like he might have thought Tyson would keep running, and that was a big moment. That was a third down that would have converted and potentially could have turned into a touchdown, because they were having a nice drive. It turns into a Justin Tucker field goal that puts them up 17-10. So he missed some throws. And but the real reason I think it's got to be C+, even though for the most part I thought he actually had a pretty solid night, was the turnovers. Just the timing was so brutal. One when they're up 17-10 in the fourth quarter, after they actually do make a few nice defensive stops. You know, they stopped the Raiders on 4th and 1. They didn't do too much on that drive, but you know, the Raiders had kind of petered out on a few drives there, end of the third quarter, early fourth, and they had a real chance to put the game away, and he fumbles, and, you know, they immediately convert it to tie the game at 17. And then in overtime, when they were just gifted a lifeline in one of the most bizarre, you know, end-of-game sequences I think I've ever seen, they get that just miracle interception from Anthony Averett on the goal line after it looked like the Raiders had walked off the game, which was just a bizarre... That entire sequence was bizarre to witness live. You know, you think there's a walk-off TD, there's a false start, and then the next thing you know, the Ravens have the ball back. And like, in that scenario, like, even though that was third down and he was getting sacked, like, if he just holds on to the ball, they're probably punting, and who knows, the Raiders could go down. But you seem like, at that point in the game with the time left, you're getting close to at least salvaging a tie out of this monstrosity of a football game. And he didn't hold on to the ball in overtime, and you just can't do that. So, yeah, I can't give him anything more than a C+.
And it seems,
for those turnovers.
It seems, I mean, just odd to say we might have salvaged a tie, but in a division where three teams may end up at 12-5, for example, what if we had the tie there? You know, that could end up making a difference in a tiebreak situation. But I'm sorry, Tim. What grade would you give to Lamar?
I don't know. I don't want to come off as like we're just Homer Lamar stands, because, you know, most Ravens fans are. You watch him and be entertained by him and not try and just defend him at every possible angle. But nothing more than a C- for me. I think the turnovers, and guys, they lost this football game. I'm sorry. You know, quarterback wins are not a stat, I know, but they lost a football game, so I can't give him anything that's, you know, more than that C-. I think he did some really good things. I mean, I don't need to retread over everything that Jay said, because he's right. I mean, that Hollywood Brown play was absolutely outstanding. But, yeah, C- for me. And the thing that I worry about, too, is, and something that we saw in his second year, his first full year as a starter, was Lamar trying to do too much. And now I feel like he might think that he has to do too much, especially if he's running for his life week in and week out. And it's going to give us some great plays. I mean, some of the running plays were fantastic. But at the same time, I've never seen Lamar take shots like he did on Monday. He took some pretty brutal hits because he had to scramble out and do everything himself. And that worries me. You know, it would help if the tight end that they just paid a bunch of money to could make any clutch catch ever in his life. We don't have to go in on it. My friends and I know were mainly pissed at Mark Andrews immediately post game. That was the main guy. Just before you go, I'll let you go, because frankly, your voice is sounding better than mine right now. But simply for me, I'm out on Mark Andrews. I'm out. I think you paid him at the wrong time. He has proven consistently over and over again that he likes tearing up the Bengals and hates playing against the Steelers in prime time. He doesn't make any big catches. He drops every important catch. And, of course, there's a little bit of hyperbole in here. I understand that. But for me, I'm out. I'm just out. And we have Sammy Watkins now. Sammy Watkins played that rely. I'm serious. Antonio's kind of laughing at me here. But he was the clutch guy making the big catches and moving the chains in the big moments. And it was, and I remember thinking midway through the fourth quarter of, oh, Watkins has already become the go-to guy. Like the get out of jail free card guy who used to be Mark Andrews. And I'm frankly happier about it, because at least I know Watkins is going to bring down the football.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to go so far as to say I'm out on Mark Andrews entirely, because I think, you know, I was impressed, and we'll get more into them. But the one thing I was surprised, I guess, was how not that involved Mark Andrews actually was in this game plan. Lamar did not look to him a lot, which was kind of surprising. But I just wanted to say, though, Tim, I'm completely, the more you see that play, the more inexcusable it is. And, you know, there were a lot of different reasons why the Ravens should have already won this game by the point that this play occurred. But ultimately, you know, they get the miracle lifeline. Lamar makes a great throw. That was a good throw. Up the middle, in between the defenders, to like what's supposed to be your reliable tight end. And he just didn't make the play. And it, you know, that's the next play, the ball's on the ground because Carl Nassib just, you know, comes unchecked off the left side or off the right side. And Tyson Williams was not able to do too much to knock the big defensive lineman off course. And the ball's on the ground and the Ravens lose the football game. So, you know, I think that's ultimately the deciding play of the game as far as the offense is concerned. Now, you know, I think there's, as we mentioned, there's some plays they left on the table. And Antonio, I do wanted to hear what you think about Lamar's game too. But the more I see it, the more I agree that that Andrews drop was just inexcusable.
You can't trust him. You can't trust him. And that's the worst part. Yeah, he's, it's the worst part of a receiver is not being able to trust him.
And he's getting that reputation. And I still think they should have paid him because they don't have, you know, you look at the box score, like they have two guys who catch more than three passes. So they still don't have a ton of weapons, and Mark Andrews is one of them. But you're right, Tim. Yeah, I know. In the big moments, he's come up small, and that's been the kind of story of his young career so far.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I was laughing before because I thought Tim was making a joke that we have Sammy Watkins, but actually pleasantly surprised by Sammy Watkins. He was reliable. I think somebody in the stands, Jace, when we were watching this game, made the joke, like, he's like Willie Snead on steroids. Like, he's like the better this Willie Snead that actually makes plays kind of thing. And he was good, and he was there. I did not have him pegged in the offseason as guy who's going to have an over-the-shoulder 40-yard catch one of the biggest moments, biggest spots of the game. The Andrews stuff is bad. I think that over the long haul, he's still going to make some plays. He's still going to have stats in games where even if it's a mediocre team, like if the guy's not there, you're going to lose to more mediocre teams. But I certainly agree. He has not yet sort of made that unbelievable catch or that tough clutch spot in those high pressure moments, and having it in week one after signing the big deal is going to look even worse given the money that he just got paid. Outside of Watkins, in terms of the playmakers, Hollywood Brown with a nice game as well. There's a pipe dream here that when Bateman is healthy, Watkins, Hollywood, and a talented rookie receiver may actually be able to put something together offensively. We'll see if that happens, and we'll see if Bateman can actually get healthy and get on the field. The last skill position guy I want to talk to you guys about, Tyson Williams. Played very well in the first half. Barely saw him in the second half. I haven't seen an explanation for that. Has it been said that it was not an injury situation, or what happened to Tyson in the second half?
I mean, for me,
I have not.
Sorry, for me, it just seemed like they wanted to bring in a Latavius Murray and have him as a more of a reliable guy that they knew would hold on to the football. Which, yeah, I don't know. It seems strange to me as well. Of a guy who seemed to do okay, had a nice, really nice touchdown run. Obviously, lit it up in preseason, but I haven't seen anything about injury. So you wonder if it was just a lack of trust for a guy making his first NFL start. But it seemed odd and it seemed off.
And when Murray was in, fourth quarter, I think after every huddle break, Lamar was pointing at Murray where he had to line up because the guy signed 3 days ago. He had no idea where to line up multiple plays, and Lamar would have to keep pointing like left side, right side, or where to split out. Very puzzling. Jace, anything else on Williams?
Well, so I just wanted to pull this up because the Ravens had their first media availability since the game this afternoon, right before we jumped on here. But per Jeff Zeribek of The Athletic, Harbaugh didn't get into Tyson Williams' usage in the second half, said he really likes all his RBs, and Ravens lucky to have the ones that they have. So, yeah, no real explanation. If I had to guess, it's probably, you know, knowing John Harbaugh, it's almost certainly related to pass protection reasons, I would think. Which, you know, I understand in part because yeah, the offensive line stunk, so they probably had to make sure they had a running back who could at least try to, you know, throw a chip on someone. And if they feel Murray, you know, as a pretty established, experienced veteran, is better at doing that, that might have just been all the calculus. But I was a little disappointed because I did think Williams was great. He had that great fourth down, you know, busted it and took it to the house early in the game. And had a few other strong runs. And I thought, you know, he should have got the ball more. I thought if they were going, you know, I think a real turning point of this game, they go for it on fourth and one right before halftime. And they're leading 14-10 at the time. And the offense was moving pretty good kind of the whole first half, and especially to that point. And, you know, they run it with Murray, and they run it, you know, they try to go left. This was apparently, I was reading Jeff Zeribick's story on The Athletic, like right after Tyree Phillips goes down. So you just have thrown Ben Powers in. It was like his first play, and you're going for it on fourth down. And I don't know. I just, Tyson had been so good to that point, and, you know, you already watched him take a fourth and one to the house for like 40 yards. So I just didn't love getting the ball to Latavius Murray in that situation, and it was blown up, and I think it changed the game because the Raiders went down, got a field goal, and instead of going into halftime up, you know, 17, I think I misstated the score earlier, but instead of going into halftime up 17-7, or even 24-7, the Ravens go up in the halftime only up 14-10, and I think that just, you know, the Raiders didn't do too hot, they didn't score until the fourth quarter, but I just think that, you know, kind of saps some momentum when you really could have kind of put the game away at the end of the first half there.
Defensively, guys, we were coming into this game, maybe all three of us, more excited about the defense than the offense for the first time in a long time, and they looked pretty strong early, and then just, boy, as it got late, it got uglier and uglier and uglier. I got a couple of points, but just Justin Houston looked okay. He had some nice pressure. Owe showed some flashes out of your first round pick. That's nice to see. But boy, and the secondary, especially late in this game, I think I just started screaming the number 83 out loud, hoping that they could hear me, that that was a guy that maybe they should try to cover better or double team. Then they even tried to double team and they couldn't tackle Darren Waller after the catch. But just that's sort of a couple of things. What did you guys see defensively from this game? Maybe first half, first second half, or just players that you liked or had big issues with?
Well, to your point on, I think we have to just turn to the Darren Waller conversation. I think that's where you start. And, you know, for me, I just look, and you know, you look at the box score, and he had a decent game, right? He ends up leading the team in tackles. He had a sack. But for me, I've been disappointed with Patrick Queen. I'm just going to, you know, I want him to succeed. The Ravens' first-round pick last year. But, you know, you look at a guy like Waller, and you look at the Ravens' defensive backs, and, you know, like, Patrick Queen, like, should be the guy who, like, should be able to, like, help on Darren Waller. That's like what separates the great middle linebackers these days. These guys like Fred Warner, they can cover tight ends. And for me, like when it comes to Patrick Queen, it's like he certainly has the speed to cover a guy like Waller, but I think he just gets lost too often. And I don't know if that's a processing thing. You know, he was fairly inexperienced at LSU. He kind of came on late and then had a good final season there. But wasn't like a huge part of their defense the first like year or two he was there. And so I don't know if it's just like a football experience thing, because he certainly has the speed too. And then the other part that frustrates me with him is the size. The size isn't there for Patrick Queen. And we saw Josh Jacobs run over him on a key third and one when he had the stop in the backfield. He's just not big enough. And, you know, that just concerns me going forward. You really hope this guy could take a leap. And I thought it was a tough first game. You know, maybe the safeties, but part of, you know, the impact of the injury of a Marcus Peters is the Ravens just have less playmakers and they need guys to step up. And when you're facing a team that has a star tight end, you need your linebackers to step up and your safeties too, frankly. You know, I think we had high expectations for too. I thought Deshaun Elliott had a pretty quiet game. I didn't remember seeing him much. Chuck was a little more involved, but it was just, looking up his stats after the game was stunning, because it felt like Waller had like 17 catches for 200 yards in the stadium. It was the only guy Carr was looking to, and just the failure I don't want to put it obviously all on Patrick Queen, because they have different players covering him every time. But if he could cover him every time, that would really help a lot of things. But, you know, just at a certain point, the concern I have that extends to the Waller thing is they don't have, I feel like, without Marcus Peters, they don't have playmakers on the back end. And I really think, like, just Waller getting catch after catch, the two just middle of the field, easy completions to Brian Edwards, I believe, that set up the Raiders tying field goal. Just 37 seconds to march right down the field on two completions with no timeouts. The Raiders, you know, they had no problem. It was like the most casual last second scoring drive to force overtime I've ever seen. It's a dearth of playmakers on the back end without Marcus Peters. And that's another thing I don't know how they fix, and that concerns me. And just watching Waller run wild and watching that those fourth quarter drives, frankly, where they gave up at the touchdown after the Ravens take the lead again, and then the field goal. It was brutal. It was a brutal night, I thought, for the back end in terms of, you know, we're so used to the Ravens defense having guys who make plays, and I just don't think they're there on the back end of this team.
I'm going to spin positive in a weird way here. I don't disagree with anything Jay said. I think the lack of just any sort of resistance in the second half especially was incredibly concerning. But for me, yeah, let's start up front. Let's do it anyway. Adafe Owe got his sack, so let's just shut up about the whole no sacks in college thing. He looked good. He looks like a guy who can turn into a playmaker for this team, at least up front, in my opinion. You're talking about a team that kind of lacks that. On the back end, I thought a lot of the young guys played well. You know, this is one of those things, Jace, I agree with you. This year, it's going to be tough to find those guys because you lose a Marcus Peters. You know, Jimmy Smith can't stay on the field. And Marcus Peters is probably one of the best playmakers in the defensive backfield in the league right now. And so it's really tough to replace that guy. Darren Waller has cemented himself as tier 1A. It is no longer Kelce, Kittle, and everybody else. It's Kelce, Kittle, Waller, and everybody else. Now, we have to play one of those other guys this week, and we'll talk about that a bit later in the show. But I think he is that good where it's tough to pin that so much of it on the team. That being said, he was wide open a couple times, and it's like it's either this guy or the fullback that Derek Carr's going to, and he's only going to the fullback when he's not going to Darren Waller. So put six guys on him. Who cares? He's not going to find anybody else. So that was a bit concerning. But for me, a couple guys that I thought stepped up. You know, Anthony Evrett, I thought was very good. Played all but one defensive snap. Chris Westry, I thought was great, too. Just, again, for the expectations we have for these guys. And Westry, too, I had multiple friends while we were watching the game. We maybe weren't as sucked into the preseason as I was. Go, who the hell is that guy? Just how big he is as a corner and a freak athlete type dude. So there might be more depth there than we think. But I do agree, you know, overall, Jace, we got a lot of solid but not enough difference maker. And that could be a concern.
And I guess just to, before kicking over to you, Antonio, I guess I should say too, I think the problems on the back end, especially in this game, but I think probably going forward all season is going to be, you know, you can do one without the other, right? It's okay if you don't have a ton of playmakers on the back end, if you can get to the quarterback. And that's something, though Owe had a sack and had a few, he had four, was credited with four pressures, which was nice. They just didn't get to Derek Carr enough. And I thought, you know, that was ultimately the difference in this game. He drops back 56 times and they get pressure on 20% of his dropbacks. And that's just not good enough. You know, Derek Carr is not the greatest QB, but if one in five, if he's only getting guys in his face one in five times he drops back, he's going to find the open guy. And there's going to be open guys because if you can't get to Derek Carr, the other guys have longer to run. And I feel like that's what was happening with Waller a lot. And so that was just another disappointing thing. But I think that is, you know, potentially something that could improve, I think, with the development of a guy like Owe. But I think in this game, that was a huge problem. I think we saw in the fourth quarter, those issues just compounded on themselves. So that's why I think it all fell apart.
in game at the stadium, I thought it was odd that it seemed like the Ravens were not blitzing as often as they normally would. And then in very big situations, they blitzed a lot of guys, and that's when they got burned just to a crisp, more than on other plays. And I mean, Derek Carr, for when you listen to Pod Like a Raven, I gotta give him a tiny bit of credit. The one thing he did well in this game, when the Ravens did bring the house, and I think he's, like, when he's on, this is his thing, he does the, like, backpedal, and he's still able to throw, like, a touch pass, even to the opposite side, well, all the way downfield. And he did that for these two big plays that were made when the Ravens tried to send the house, and because the house didn't get there, and he had time to take a few, you know, backpedals, and then find guys for 40 yards, one that was almost a touchdown, that certainly looked like a touchdown at the end of regulation, and then, or in overtime, I should say, and then the second one that was completed for a full touchdown to end the game. And I wonder, I mean, I guess the reason they didn't blitz as often as they did was because they were afraid of the one-on-one situations that the Raiders were able to get, specifically with Darren Waller and some other guys, even Hunter Renfro, catching more passes than I thought he would catch in an NFL game. But yeah, we will see in week two, specifically as we get to another offensive problem, what the blitz numbers look like, if they're going to try to protect the back end a little bit more, or if they're going to realize that, hey, rushing 3-4 guys is not working for us yet, not until Owe becomes a major disruptor, and see if they adjust things in that second game. Guys, anything else from this Raiders game? Any, like, drinks we want to pour out? Mainly, Tim and I both have hot teas, so we're not going to pour those out because we desperately need them. But
yeah.
Any final words before we sort of bury this Las Vegas game?
I have a bad feeling that we're on here, and apologies again, we should have mentioned. Obviously, the recording time's a little different because your boys were in Vegas, and you think we're in bad shape now. We were not in any shape to be talking about the game post-match, even though I know some people definitely wanted that. I think for this team, it gets worse before it gets better. I really do. And that's tough for a schedule that gets way tougher on the back end. Glass half full. Maybe you think it gives them time to work some stuff out before the really bad stretch run. Me being glass half empty, I think this is going to be another average, and well, I shouldn't say another, probably the first average Raven season of the Lamar Jackson era. And I don't think people are ready to hear that. And it's the way they lost, obviously. And I know it wasn't a blowout or anything, but I think we get to week two, and spoiler alert, I think it's not going to be close. And then we get to week three, and it's a decent win against the Lions team. And then we're kind of rebalanced a little bit, and we're a little more positive. But for me, the way this team performed and just the fundamental problems they have, offensive line, pass rush, playmakers, like those big three things that we just spent the time talking about. I don't care how good he is. I love him. We all do. I don't care how good Aide is. Those are the three of the most important things in football. And I think it is going to hamper this team all season long.
I think that's a solid point, Tim. I think I'm still generally a little higher on the overall aspect.
If I had my voice back, I'd probably be a little more positive. But I'm the dread of maybe not ever getting my voice back, too, is probably bringing me down just a little bit, I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, this was true in the wake of Gus Edwards' injury, and I think even more true now after we've seen one game. It's all going to be on Lamar this season. This is kind of guy in a... You don't want to call it a make or break year. I think he's too good, obviously, for that. What he's already accomplished, certainly. But as you kind of said, I think if the Ravens make the playoffs, it's going to be based on how good can Lamar be. And I wouldn't be stunned, if they still make the playoffs. I think Lamar can be great. I think if he cleans up, if he does have those two turnovers, I think we're very well talking about a win, certainly. Or could be, but it's a huge year for him. I think even more so than we thought this time last week, certainly. So, it'll be a fascinating year. I hope I still maintain some hope some of these issues can be cleaned up as we go along and maybe guys emerge with more playing time. But it was certainly kind of a disheartening first game, because certainly they're starting this year in a hole. And they, you know, they haven't lost week one since 2015. And it's not fun. It's not fun to start your year with a loss.
Yeah, Tim, I do agree. I think it is going to get worse before it gets better. But outside of this Chiefs game, that stretch is too perfect for a team that needs to get worse before it gets better. Just to recap this first half of the schedule for the listener, after this Chiefs game, which, oh boy, it's Lions, Broncos, Colts, Chargers, Bengals, Vikings, Dolphins. I think they're going to hopefully weather that well enough and then try to get healthy, try to figure some things out, but certainly we will see. It's 1 week at a time in this new 17-game NFL schedule. We're going to go around the NFL now, starting with the Ravens' three rivals in the AFC North. Browns losing to Chiefs in a close game where the Browns were up by double digits for large chunks of that game. Steelers beating the Bills in Buffalo in one of the Steeleriest wins ever. See, ever. They happen all the time, and yet this was even worse than other ones. And then the Bengals beating the Vikings in overtime in a game where for a while it seemed like Cincinnati was in control and then almost ended in a tie. But the Bengals did pull that out 27-24. Favorite, I don't know how much of this you guys watched, but which game maybe gave you, intrigued you the most or gave you the most concern as we look at the AFC North?
See, I'll go concern here. I'll go Pittsburgh. I don't categorize this as one of the most Pittsburgh wins ever, because I know, and every Ravens fan, we don't even have to explain that. Every Ravens fan knows what Antonio means when he said that. I just thought this was from a Ravens perspective, oh bleep, that defense is still incredible, and we might have been sleeping on Pittsburgh a little bit. It was very much their early season last year. We're sitting here screaming about how they're the worst 11-0 team of all time. Yada, yada, yada. They clearly flame out and what have you. And I think a lot of that is true. I still think they were not very good running the football. Roethlisberger looked okay at best. But that's a defense that's going to carry them. And, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about it. T.J. Watt got paid, deservedly so. And you get all the stupid puff pieces, you know, that when T.J. Watt took Adam Schefter's Twitter account and tweeted out the story about him, which is great. Thanks, Adam. But for me, I think that defense is that good where they are going to cause a massive problem for everybody. The Cleveland one, I mean, let me set the scene. This is, and I've made no bones about it or made no secret about it. It was my first time actually gambling on football games. We had a nice private table at this book, basically, where we're watching all the games all around us. I was in heaven. I want to go back, even though it might mean I, you know, become a mute. And watching that game, I was surrounded by Pittsburgh and Browns fans, among others, obviously. And just watching Cleveland melt down again was just fantastic. I thought, even though I had lost the bet because I had Chiefs minus, I think it was 6.5, and they only won by 4, I was still so happy to see that Cleveland hasn't changed. So in terms of the thing that intrigued me most, it's the Steelers, and that they're actually, I think, very good in a division where we need to be very good to keep pace. I think the Browns are good too, but it was just hilarious to watch them just melt down once again and have the Chiefs storm all the way back. And every reporter that had their piece going about how great this Browns team is and Super Bowl or bust from Cleveland this year, yada, yada, yada. Nope. Let's everybody calm down because you're still Cleveland.
Thank God the Browns lost, because this would have been just an absolutely miserable week if every other AFC North team was 1-0 and the Ravens were 0-1. I agree more with Antonio. Well, but I think you said it, Tim. I think this is the exact same Steelers team as last year. And whether that's good or bad, it's going to be annoying. That's for sure. That defense is awesome. But I think their offense is still bad. Like, they had 252 total yards in this game and won handily thanks to a series of weird, bizarre choices by the Bills, a blocked punt. The Bills, when they threw the ball backwards on 4th-and-1 at midfield, that was a choice. That didn't work out for them. It was just very annoying to watch that game and just be like, you know they're not the, like, you watch the game and you're like, the Buffalo Bills are the better football team. They led 10-0 before allowing 23 straight points to the Steelers before they tacked on a late touchdown in garbage time. The Bills did. But so I was annoyed by that game. And I should, to be clear to your point, Tim, I think, yeah, the Steelers will absolutely hang around the division race all year. So I am concerned about that. But I don't think they'll win the Super Bowl good. And I don't know that I think the Browns are either. But they certainly, they looked impressive in that first half. But, you know, Baker did Baker things. Appeared to try to throw the ball out of bounds. Did not. And thus ended the game on a, I believe, Mike Rhodes. It was former Vikings defensive back they have there, but picked him off. But, you know, I think we've said it on this program a lot. Nick Chubb's really good. The more the Browns rely on him, the better. But, yeah, it was a classic Cleveland meltdown. Just their one punt of the day, the ball did not get punted. That did not help them win the football game. Patrick Mahomes had his classic roll right and drop back 10 yards and then throw 70 yards down the field to Tyreek Hill, which I'm sure we'll see in the coming week. But, yeah, it was I'm just so glad the Browns lost because I could not handle this week if all three of those teams were 1-0 and the Ravens were 0-1. And then, yeah, for Cincinnati, you know, I still don't think there'd be a great team this year, but, you know, Burrow looks solid, and they took a nice gamble. You know, it's rare to, I was certain we were going to see the, what would have been the fifth Bengals tie since 2008, which seems like a very Bengals stat. But they went for the win in overtime, and they got it on the final play. Oh, one final thing we should mention on the Browns, just because I think it's very funny. The Browns, since they've been, you know, jump-started in 1999, are 1-21-1 in Week 1 since 1999, which seems impossible. Also, my friend Wag pointed this out to me, so shout out to him. But for you Pod Like a Ravens listeners out there, don't look up who the one was against. FYI.
Tim, I have a question for you. Did you punch a Browns fan for every time they showed Odell Beckham Jr. on the sideline? Because if so, there probably were no more Browns fans at the book by the end of that game.
No, because that was the thing that made me smile. Why would I have an angry reaction to that? They showed OBJ again. We did this last week. Sitting on the sidelines, not playing. It's been announced he's not playing week two either. He has made his entire career off of one catch, and it was a great catch, don't get me wrong, but that was, I mean, I feel bad. There were, from what I remember, 2 to 3 Browns fans in there who, I don't feel bad. That's definitely not what I felt. It was more pure joy and enlightenment watching that game happen, but yeah, that's just, they're talented enough where they can deal with having a quote-unquote superstar not live up to his potential, but it, that whole situation there is a mess for me.
My last note on the AFC North, I'll say it one time. I'll make it a compliment once, and then that'll be it. Happy for Ja'Marr Chase as this in his rookie debut for the Bengals. 5 catches, 101 yards, and a touchdown after a lot of chat about him having a, you know, the dropsies, the, like, reports that he was freaking out, that the NFL ball was different than the college ball, and it was just sort of setting up for, oh no, is he going to be, like, a disaster for them? Had a really good game, and now I will never compliment it again because he will probably torch the Ravens for the next 10 years. Around the NFL, guys, around the rest of the league, I'm going to turn to you guys and get maybe what your favorite game was or your favorite talking point, but the one of the biggest notes where some people in Vegas lost money on this team, the Green Bay Packers absolutely smoked, like, JV versus varsity to Jameis Winston and the New Orleans Saints, and now they're a team that everybody's going to be following to see if Winston can play well. All of a sudden, they're going to be an NFC contender. That's the Sean Payton effect. I learned something today because Jason informed me. I was going to say the NFC West may send four teams to the playoffs this year. Can't happen, Chase. They're not allowed to send four teams from one division. I did not know that, so that won't be happening. But three of them will probably go. They all four of those teams looked very, very strong. And then I turn to you guys. Which games maybe were you watching on? Which games were you betting on, mayhaps? And either helped you out or let you down? Or what else? What did you follow this week in the NFL?
Yeah, Antonio, I'll say I get it. Because Sunday I went 8-6, and I was like, I feel pretty good about this. For week one of the NFL football season, not great, but over 500, I'll take it. A bit more on the NFC West. I didn't have the Cardinals, unfortunately. The 49ers was the all-time bad beat of the week. It was an 8.5. They ended up winning by 8. Another friend of mine, who I'm not sure I'll mention just in case he doesn't want this known, he was not having as good of a day, and we kept telling each other, don't worry, at least the Niners are a lock. And that's what happens when you mention that over and over again. But on the Rams, specifically for me, that Rams team is so good, and you kind of mentioned it there. I think Matt Stafford, as advertised in this McVay offense and what they're going to do. But I could not imagine being a Chicago Bears fan, and specifically hearing my coach over and over again talk about, well, we just drafted this quarterback. We're one of the elder statesmen in NFL history, yet probably don't have one superstar quarterback in our history. A few flashes here and there, but like, Rex Grossman is on the Mount Rushmore of Chicago Bears quarterbacks. And to have Justin Fields and to say, because I promised Andy Dalton he'd be QB1, he's going to stay as QB1, and you're not going to give Fields this chance. And then to not only not start him, but then just tease Bears fans over and over again by bringing him in multiple spots and bringing him in to do little run plays and then immediately taking him out, having him actually like throw the ball in passing sets and then just like take him out after a play, I would be throwing my TV out of the hotel window watching that as a Bears fan, because it was just infuriating to see. You know this guy is better, yet just because you're so stubborn and set in your own ways, you're not just gonna play the most talented guy on the field. So that I thought was interesting. And then a couple more. The Eagles, man. I thought the Eagles were impressive. They kicked the crap out of a Falcons team who, I think we talked about it on this podcast when we did our over-unders. I have no idea why people thought that Atlanta was going to be a good, sneaky, possible playoff team. That team is bad. And, you know, if you got the under there, as some of us may or may not have, good on you for getting the under there on the Atlanta Falcons. And then the Broncos, a team that I've talked over and over about here. I think Teddy Two Gloves is good enough to be a serviceable quarterback. Obviously, they lost Jerry Jeudy, which is unfortunate, and I know it's just the Giants. I understand that, but I thought the Broncos were very impressive. I watched a lot of that game because, again, we only get three games in that afternoon slot rather than, you know, just put 9 on at the 1 o'clock slot, 3 on at the 4:15 slot, which makes absolutely no sense. We don't have to do that debate here. But because of that, watched a lot of the Broncos and was thoroughly impressed with them, and I think that they can be – I think they're a sneaky playoff team this year. I really do.
I think you somehow undersold that 49ers not cover. They were up 41-17 with at the two-minute warning and did not cover their spread, depending on where certain folks got the number on. They ended up winning by 8 after a truly bizarre series of events. But for me, the game I have to highlight, I think, that we just haven't talked about, is the New Orleans Saints 38, the Green Bay Packers 3, and Jacksonville, Florida, with, you know, due to the impact of Hurricane Ida, this game was moved. We talked last week about how the Saints picked a location that was allegedly hard for Packers fans to get to. And it turns out maybe the Packers didn't get to it, because that team completely no-showed that game. One of the just most inexplicable, I believe literally the worst loss by point differential, or at least tied with it, in Aaron Rodgers' career. A-Rod, 15 for 28 for 133 yards and 2 interceptions. This man's the reigning NFL MVP. He spent all offseason, you know, complaining about the team. And then he shows up and submits one of the greatest stinkers in the history of his future Hall of Fame career. Like, that, And we talked about this when we saw each other in person. Like, his second interception was about as, like, nonchalant and lazy a pick as you'll see. He basically just kind of threw a ball up for grabs and was like, maybe he'll run under it. And the over-the-top safety easily made the play on the ball and was significantly closer to it than the Packers' closest receiver was. It was just a very bizarre game. And we have to say, on the other side, Jameis Winston, 5 touchdown passes, 14 for 20, 148 yards, and 5 TDs. A very strange stat line in its own right, to have that many touchdowns with, you know, sub 150 yards. I believe that I'd heard that had never been done before in the NFL, that many TDs on that few yards. He should have had one interception. It was wiped out by a very dubious roughing the passer call. But otherwise, you know, officially no interceptions. And I don't know, do we have to reevaluate what we think of the Saints this year? I can't imagine Jameis isn't going to start throwing picks at some point, but maybe the LASIK really helped. So this game just had a number of storylines. It was certainly, you know, the most kind of eye-opening and bizarre score of the day. Like, you just kept watching it, you know, as it flashed on your red zone, and you were like, what's happening? How is this score, you know, how's it 24-3, 31-3, 38-3? It was very confusing, and that's pretty much all I have to say on it, but it was definitely the strangest, probably, result of the weekend, I would say, and certainly did not go the way I saw it happening.
It looked like the Packers game against the Bucks the year before. And it's a game now that Rodgers has every so often, in his mid-30s, where once they're down 17, he just kind of, like, gives up the game. And he sort of looks, Jace, as you said, nonchalant, and sort of packs it in and says, well, we'll be back next week. And then in the past, they have been back the following week. So he's come out and said it's just one game. Obviously, everybody's going to say that. I think they heard me come in this pod and say over 10 wins for the Green Bay Packers, and then immediately had to have one of the worst games in Rodgers' career. We will see over the long haul, because this was certainly one that they would like to have, and then I think they have a couple of tough games early on. They're at 49ers and home against the Steelers, not next week, but in the 2 weeks after that, so it's not an easy start for Green Bay if they want to get into playoff position and take control of the NFC North.
Just one more before we move on, because I know we got to move on. We got Random Raven. We got everything. Because Jace put it in here. We didn't get to it, so I do need to say it. Shout out former Ravens coach David Cauley getting a victory for the Houston Texans, who, guess what, are not the worst team in the league at this very moment. Looked like they had some fight. And more importantly, on the other side, this Jacksonville Jaguars team is going to be a dumpster fire. And I said it once, and I'll say it again. Urban Meyer might be the guy to ruin Trevor Lawrence, or get close to it. Until Trevor gets out, maybe that's when we see the full potential, because they're just completely mismanaged. It's a bad run football team. And as Jace, our college football correspondent, puts in here, Clay Helton was obviously fired at USC. Urban is already being asked about the job. So is he going to Bobby Petrino this? Is he going to Bobby Petrino it, where he leaves the Falcons to take the Arkansas job? I could totally see Urban doing that if this team is like 0-6 or 2-7 or, you know, whatever it is. them leaving, or him just saying, you know what, I'm out. And then all of a sudden next offseason you see him in Southern California.
Yeah, it's always good when you're one game in and already denying other coaching rumors. But, you know, he's not going to escape it because it's past. And I was going to joke, Tim, the reason I think they won't ruin Trevor Lawrence is, yeah, I think we're getting one and done with Urban Meyer, probably. They looked horrible, and the Texans put it to him. And, yeah, credit to David Culley, man. You know, maybe they won't be as bad. I do think people, you know, just because they added Trevor Lawrence, forgot that the Jags went 1-15 last year, which only a select few teams in NFL history have, you know, been that bad. So, yeah, that was really the final highlight for me, too. It's going to be a thing that lingers over this Jaguars season all year until USC hires a coach, which they're not going to do until December at the earliest. So, yeah, and just for those of who follow both sports, if USC hasn't hired a coach by January, it's probably because it's going to be Urban Meyer if he makes it the full year.
We love it. We love week one. The week one coaching carousel to go to back to college. All right, that's it for the NFL for this week. Jace is up this week with the Random Raven, and then we're going to do a little quick preview of Ravens Chiefs. We're going to try to make it maybe as quick as possible, like sort of just like the just rip the Band-Aid off and then get on out of here. But before that, Jace, who do you have for us with the Random Raven?
Yeah, so I think this one's kind of you'll know it or you don't, but perhaps some of the other clues will key you in. But clue number one, and I landed on this guy based on recent happenings in the Ravens running back room. So clue number one, this running back was brought in by the Ravens during training camp in 2001 following the season-ending knee injury to second-year star Jamal Lewis. He rushed for 658 yards on 168 attempts for the 2001 Ravens, totals that led the team, and had three rushing touchdowns. And we should also say this guy also brought in because Priest Holmes departed in that offseason as well, so they did not have Priest to lean on. So they went to the veterans. And so, but this veteran, that 2001 campaign with the Ravens, proved to be the final season of a productive career for the then 33-year-old. He was drafted by Minnesota in the ninth round of the 1990 NFL draft, a round that no longer exists, and he compiled 8,614 yards and 73 touchdowns on the ground in his career from 1990 to 2001. And the high point of that career was his Pro Bowl 1996 season with Washington that saw him rush for a league-high 21 touchdowns. And clue number five, this player's number 29 was immediately handed to sixth-round pick and former Random Raven Chester Taylor the following season.
Oh, I'm so angry. I know who this is, Jace, because I maybe YouTube at various moments the Ravens Hard Knocks in the year 2001, and he was prominently involved. Oh my gosh, but I cannot remember, and it's Vegas Brain. We're going to call it Vegas Brain, and we'll see if I can remember here in the next 15 minutes.
Yeah, I can barely.
Tim, any thoughts?
I can barely remember what happened yesterday at this point. So, this is probably all going to be all on you, Antonio. Unless you know, the next time we do the clues, it pops back into my head.
All right, but a fantastic choice, Chase, nonetheless. And you caught us on the right week for a guy from 20 years ago. All right, Ravens, Chiefs. Are 3.5-point favorites at the bank. I'm trying to recall a stat on this. Basically, Lamar isn't an underdog very often, and when he is, it's not by more than 3 points. And so at home, more than 3-point underdogs is a rarity. It may not have happened since he's become the starter, and maybe his rookie year, I'm not sure. But the line isn't that big compared to like other NFL games that the Chiefs are playing, but I think it's certainly in that zone that all three of us are afraid of it. Let's start with the Ravens offensively. From 1 week to the next, can the Ravens make, I mean, they're not going to all of a sudden have five all pros on the offensive line, but can they fix the miscommunication in a short week, in 6 days? Can they figure out where and when to help Villanueva in the right situations? Are they going to figure out who exactly should be playing in spot of Tyree Phillips? Does Ben Baltimore make an appearance in this game for one reason or another? Can they do things to sort this line out a little bit in the general sense and make this a competitive game?
I am optimistic, to your point, Antonio, that the some of the communication issues, some of the offensive line things can be improved, and that can help the running game. I will not be stunned if we see a lot more Lamar with the ball in this game. We didn't touch on it too much, but not a lot of designed runs in the game against the Raiders for Lamar. I don't know if that was a choice to try to keep him fresh, knowing it's a 17-game season now, or just part of their game plan for that, but he's the best runner they have. So if they're able to get him in space, to create that and move the chains. And, you know, it's the same old, we've played the Chiefs now. This will be the fourth consecutive season the Ravens and Chiefs have played a football game. And the game plan kind of remains the same every time. It's can you, you know, drag out, shorten the game, basically. Long drives, time of possession. But to your point, that's required on cohesion and improvement on the offensive line. Chiefs have two big studs. Chris Jones is a beast, probably better than anyone the Raiders certainly have on the defensive line, and Frank Clark's around as well. Are they going to be a problem? If they are, it's going to be a long afternoon, or long night, rather, for the Ravens. But I am at least a little hopeful that we might see just a little more from the running game, perhaps, in this game.
The fact that you just said, the thing I'm optimistic about is we might see more from the running game from the Baltimore Ravens. Tells you all you need to know about this game. To answer every one of those questions you had, Antonio, no. I don't think anything can get fixed in this amount of time. I think the Chiefs are better than the Raiders in every single way. And so if we play like we did on Monday night, it's going to be a bloodbath, and this one's going to be over early. And, you know, frankly, I'll get to go to bed, which might not be the worst thing in the world. I think this game, my only two takeaways on this, if the Ravens have any sort of chance whatsoever, this has to be a Lamar legendary game. This has to be one that they're showing before he walks up in Canton and makes his speech about being a Hall of Fame quarterback. Like, I think that he's going to have to do it all. No turnovers. 150 yards on the ground. 250 yards passing. And, you know, a combined 6 touchdowns or something ridiculous like that. On the defensive side of the football, Wink, I love you, buddy. I love you to death. We all know this. I think it's time to give up the blitz in this game. This comes from Warren Sharp of Sharp Football, and if you watch football, you know who he is. And he just tweeted this tonight, quote, "The Ravens blitz Mahomes on 44.7% of dropbacks the last 3 times they've played," which is very typical for the Ravens, not really typical for anybody else. The results, 76% completion percentage, 554 yards on 8.8 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Don't do it. We've seen the new too-high defense that's coming into the league. Brandon Staley was a big proponent of that, now the Chargers head coach. It's something that slowed the Chiefs down before. It's obviously not something that we're just going to implement a brand-new system just to stop them, but he's got to make adjustments here if he wants to keep this anywhere near close. And, yeah, I don't have faith, but, hey, there'll be more positive people. And you know what? I got one final one because I do have to mention it because I know people that would be upset if I didn't. The Ravens are back at the bank with fans in prime time. Fans who have been clawing desperately to get back into that stadium. And the first game they get, it's Patrick Mahomes on prime time. My good, loyal Baltimore people are going to be well pickled up. They're going to be ready to go. They're going to be angry. They're going to be mean. They're going to have their voice, unlike me. And I think that crowd could sway a couple points here and there. But, you know, that being said, I've said that before about Ravens Chiefs in primetime on Monday night, you know, against Baltimore at the bank. And that didn't work out either. So who knows?
That is a good point, though, Tim. This is the first time the Ravens will actually face Mahomes with a hostile crowd actually in the building. So I don't think you can discount that. That being said, what concerns me about this game, I completely agree with you. I think if they win on defense, it's a wink game. He has a just fantastic game plan, because I think personnel-wise, the concerns we have had and talked about with that Raiders game, I think will just be magnified in this game. Patrick Mahomes is significantly better than Derek Carr. You know, Travis Kelce, I would say, is better than Darren Waller. Tyreek Hill is significantly better than Henry Ruggs, who, truthfully, as mentioned, wasn't too much of a problem for the Ravens, but Tyreek Hill is going to be. He has been. We know it. We know he is. He's very fast. I don't think Marlon Humphrey can keep up with him, because no one can, frankly, keep up with Tyreek Hill when he's running full speed. So these are my concerns. It's as Tim said, everything the Raiders did well against the Ravens on offense, The Chiefs just have better versions of that. They have a better play caller. They have Andy Reid, one of the great coaches in NFL history, top 10 all time in wins. It just is a lot of forces stacking up against them, and especially as Antonio mentioned, I think earlier, coming off a short week too. You play late on the West Coast on Monday. Game goes to overtime. They're probably not landing in Baltimore until 6 a.m. Tuesday, so that day's a wash. And so now it's Wednesday to Sunday night that they have to prepare for this game, and you're facing the best team in the NFL over the last three seasons. It's just not a recipe for success, and I worry, to Tim's point, Mahomes has lit up the blitz, and we've seen the last two games, especially against the Chiefs, the 2018 game, significantly closer. Ravens should have won that game, if you remember how that ends. But the last two, the 2019 and the 2020 games, the Ravens just fall in big holes early. And this, you know, to Tim's said, Lamar, unless he bees legendary, could dig out of the hole, the Ravens have proven they can't to this point in the Lamar era, at least like to the degree of the holes they've fallen in against the Chiefs the last few years. So I'm not super optimistic. Chiefs offense is the best in the NFL, and Patrick Mahomes is the best QB in the NFL. And I think it could be a long night if they don't sort some stuff out.
I don't think it's I'm not going to go so far as to say it's going to be a blowout, because even in the game last year where the Ravens were worse than the Chiefs pretty much all game, it was a 7-point game in the fourth quarter. The Ravens cut it, they worked at it, they worked away, and they had a chance in theory to win that game. If you don't blitz, which I agree with Tim, as we saw, the last game that the Chiefs lost was the Super Bowl of last season, where Tampa Bay was able to get pressure, and a lot of it with four. You got to get pressure with four. Like, Justin Houston, this is why you're here. This is why the Ravens drafted you. The Chiefs' tackle struggled a bit against the Browns in pass coverage. Orlando Brown Jr., one name that we will be hearing probably 25,000 times during the broadcast. Granted, those pass rushers were Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney. But that, you know,
both
that's
former number one overall picks.
That's the weak spot, quote unquote, that you have to exploit and try to do it with four. Calais Campbell, you know, try to disrupt in the middle of the line there. I thought he had some nice plays against the Raiders disrupting. And then you need the tip ball that becomes an interception. You need the busted play offensively that turns into a Hollywood 80-yard touchdown catch or something like that, and you stay close, and then you make it a coin flip late in the game. I had four questions in my notes here, and it was about the line. Can the Ravens D make enough plays? Can Lamar avoid turnovers? And finally, can I motivate myself to pick Ravens +3.5? Maybe it's, you know, Chiefs end up winning by a field goal, but no, I cannot. I cannot motivate myself enough. Too many issues last week. Not enough time. And so I'm taking the Chiefs, sadly, at -3.5 as we pivot now to our gambling section. If you guys have more on the game, feel free to add to it when we get to it. But in the gambling, last week, 1-2, not the greatest start. Won the Seahawks pick, and then I lost the Ravens pick, which should never have happened. And then my tees all fell apart. But we're back this week, and we're going to correct it. I'm taking the Chiefs -3.5. I'm taking the LA Rams at -4 at Indianapolis. I liked Seattle over the Colts on the road, and they took care of that game. So I'm very much going to like the Rams on the road against Indianapolis at about the same price with the -4. I realized in the past, I don't take a lot of dogs in my picks. I'm sort of a favorites guy and hope that two or three, you know, the majority of them hit, but I'm taking a dog here, a small one. And that's the Cowboys at +3 on the road against the LA Chargers. I'm just going value here. I get this game is in Los Angeles. I think the Chargers are fine. I think Herbert's good. But the Cowboys showed me a lot against the Bucs, specifically the offense against that Bucs defense in week one. And they have a lot of rest here. They played Thursday. They get the extra few days to prepare for this game. So I like the Cowboys at +3 there. And then Arizona, who absolutely took care of Tennessee in week one, they are only giving 3.5 points to the Minnesota team that just lost to the Cincinnati Bengals. Don't believe in Minnesota. Don't like them. Arizona's at home in this one, so I am all over Arizona at -3.5 against the Vikings.
Yeah, I like that one a lot, actually, too. And, you know, we're not going to do all the same picks, so I'll give a little different here. It's Chiefs by 3.5. It's Chiefs by 4.5. It's Chiefs by 6.5. It's Chiefs. I have the LA Rams -4 away to Indianapolis as well. Basically the same story you were talking about. The Colts, I think the Colts are bad. I think Carson Wentz is not good. I think Quentin Nelson's health is an issue. And I won't go basically the same thing you did, so I won't go with the Arizona pick, but I'm going to pick another dog. Cincinnati away to Chicago, +2. I like what I saw from Cincy. I think they're a feisty team, and Chicago's simply not. And until they actually just put Fields in, I think that could end up being a nightmare. And that defense is not what it used to be either. So for me, I'm going to take Cincinnati away, +2 as well.
I love underdogs. That's been a theme for me throughout, but it scares me. I've been riding favorites early in this this NFL season, and I'm doing it again today. Chiefs -3.5 for all the reasons we talked about. Unfortunately, I'm with Antonio on the Cardinals -3.5. Minnesota, you know, lost to a Bengals team that won 3-4 games last year. It was not great. And you know, Chandler Jones, a pending free agent that I'm now somehow desperately trying to figure out how the Ravens sign next year. You know, he's led the NFL in sacks before, and he's off to a great start to do it again this year because he had 5 against the Tennessee Titans, and Taylor Lewan in particular, the former Pro Bowl left tackle. He just got beat time and time again, and it just, I don't want to say it makes me sad, but it makes me think of the possibilities. What if we had a pass rusher like that? This guy single-handedly changed the game. It was incredible. And then the other pick for me for this week is Saints -3.5 against Carolina. I'm not actually sure. Oh, it's in Carolina. So the Saints are at Carolina, but I was impressed, you know? I liked what I saw from the Saints, and I think Sean Payton's a great coach, and am I going to believe in Sam Darnold? I don't think so against a Sean Payton team. I don't see it. I think the Panthers have made some good strides under Matt Rhule, but I think they're still in the midst of a rebuild, quite frankly, and I think the Saints are, you know, this is the team that's won the NFC South 4 straight years, and they look like, you know, we had questions about their quarterback position, but if Jameis can minimize the mistakes, which is always a big if with them, I think they'll be a contender in that division. And so I think they can go on the road and cover that spread early in the season, especially a Panthers, you know, 19-14 over the Jets in week 1. That's fine, but they weren't impressive. So, yep, that's it for me. Saints rounds out my picks for the week.
All winners there. Jace, why don't you read the random Raven clues for us one more time, and then we get on out of here.
Let me pull it up here. So this running back was brought in by the Ravens during training camp in 2001 following the season-ending knee injury suffered by second-year star Jamal Lewis. He rushed for 658 yards and 168 attempts for the Ravens in that 2001 campaign, totals that both led the team, and added 3 rushing touchdowns, which was second on the team. The 2001 campaign with the Ravens proved to be the final season of a productive career for the then 33-year-old running back. He was drafted by Minnesota in the 9th round of the 1990 NFL Draft and compiled 8,614 yards and 73 touchdowns on the ground in his career, and was named to the 1996 Pro Bowl with Washington after he rushed for a league-high 21 touchdowns that year. And then the final clue, this player's number 29 was immediately handed to 6th-round pick and former random Raven Chester Taylor the next season as the Ravens drafted a running back to serve as a backup to the now uninjured Jamal Lewis.
Oh, man. I mean, it just proves that Tim and I had a good weekend, I think, overall, that we cannot come up with his name. Jace, I have like 3 different ideas. I mean, it's not right, but I'm going to say the last name is Rhodes, but I can't remember who this is.
It is not Rhodes. This is the one, the only. Tim, any guesses, I guess, before I reveal?
I'll say, I mean, Stephen Davis, but that's wrong.
No, not Stephen Davis. This was basically the guy who was Washington's running back before Stephen Davis. It is Terry Allen.
Oh. I don't even know who that is. I have no idea. This is the first random Raven in a long time where I can't even... Nothing.
The Ravens nothing. Leading rusher in 2001, Tim?
Yeah, the Elvis Gerback year. That's one that I love to remember fondly.
I was thinking of Anthony a lot of it, and then I was like, that can't be it. Allen instead.
Yeah, Terry Allen, they kind of plucked him off the scrap heap. He only rushed for 179 yards in four games for New Orleans in 2000, spent the 99 season with Washington, but he had a good four-year run with North Turner's Washington Redskins squad there, and then he was with Minnesota for a few years as well, the first four seasons of his career. Eclipsed 1,000 yards four separate times in his career. Kind of an underrated good running back of the 90s, but yeah, played out the string, the final season of his career with the Ravens, the defending Super Bowl champs after Jamal Lewis went down. And yeah, he wasn't quite Jamal Lewis, but that's no fault of Terry Allen's. He had a great career. But yeah, Terry Allen, random Raven for the week.
If any listener, and you know, on a rule here, but if any listener got this correct, let us know. We will give you a shout out on the next episode because we were stumped here this week. So you deserve
first time in a long time.
You deserve a little call out for that. If you were all over Terry Allen, maybe you like me recently watched the full slate of Ravens Hard Knocks from 2001. All right, that's gonna do it for us. A somber week one, but hopefully some positive news or maybe some positive flashes next week after this Sunday night Chiefs game. If you are gonna be at that game, make a lot of noise. First game in a long time with fans in that stadium. For Tim Horsey and Jace Evans, I am Antonio Barbera. Thank you, as always, for listening to us on Pod Like a Raven. We will see you next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.